Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Morning, Humphrey.
Good morning.
Welcome to 3CR's Solidarity Breakfast.
Yes, indeed. Fun and games everywhere.
I know. Now you're going to take on a few things here.
Well, yet again, looking at the state of the global economy, up on the website, the version up there begins with a lot of quotes and references to people who are in a better position than any of us to know what is going on in their system. But we don't have time to go into all of those, but there's one of them, one piece of wisdom from the masters of the universe that I can't prevent myself from sharing with us to start with.
Yes.
And that's from Lord Rothschild.
Yes.
Now, if anyone knows, Lord Rothschild should. And
yes.
He told his shareholders a couple of weeks ago that by keeping interest rates below zero and pumping money out at the rate they've been doing, the central banks, he said, have conducted the biggest experiment in financial policy in the history of the world. And no one knows how it's going to turn out. And that sounds like a bit of a warning, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does. Mildly put in the way that you would. So what I want to do, though, is to look at the Australian banks today. We've been looking around the world for the last little bit, but I want to try and tie in what the Australian banks are up to and how that fits in. And there are three stories, I suppose. One of them, you know, the $9 billion profit declared by the Commonwealth banks.
Oh, yes.
The failure of the banks to pass on the full 25% in interest rate cuts.
Yep.
And finally, the cries for a royal commission into the banks.
Mm.
So they're the three things that, you know, I want to try and weave together a bit. Now, just one simple thing about the $9 billion, and this applies to any profit declared by any company. The left sometimes gets itself all excited about a very big number.
Yep.
What's important is the rate.
Mm.
But just very simply, if you've got $9 billion as your capital, and you make $9 billion, you've made 100%. If, however, you've invested $900 billion
yes.
and you make $9 billion,
yep.
you've gone broke.
Exactly.
But you've still got $9 billion.
Mm.
So the important point, and I just to make this point to opening, is that get beyond the very big number problem and look at the rate of return, because that's really the crucial thing. Of course, there, we won't go into that now, those rates of return, like the very big number, are so manipulated by their accountants that you can't actually be sure what the kind of real numbers are. But anyway, so that's the first point about the $9 billion out of the Commonwealth Bank. People said, well, if they made $9 billion, why aren't they passing on the full 25% that the Reserve Bank said they wanted to be the cash rate to be reduced by? Now, if we look into this, is it entirely a bad thing for working people? Because that's the question we've always got to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Not some abstract question, but is there anything in this which is not entirely a bad thing? I mean, on the face of it, they're going to make money, workers are going to pay more. That's obviously not good. But is it as simple as that? I want to suggest that it isn't quite as simple as that. First of all, we've got to look at what the Reserve Bank itself is trying to do. And to do that, we've got to pull back and look at that the interest rate is the only arm of policy that the government has left, really, after the ALP's deregulation of the financial sector in the 1980s.
Mm.
So out of those what I call deforms, on the one hand, the Commonwealth has the whole budgetary process. I mean, it can influence the economy in that way. Now, there, of course, as we know, you've got to get your budget through the Senate, So, you know, that's not a very effective arm. And the last 3 or 4 years, as we've seen.
Yes.
And whatever you do there, it's going to take time to flow through. By the time you get it through the budget, then you've got to implement all the particular policies that you put into it, whether you're going to spend more or cut back or tax more or tax here or there, shift it around. All of those things can influence it, but they're going to take time.
But is that why the government was so strongly advocating that the banks actually passed the full 25% on to the consumers?
I think it's partly that, and partly they are hoping. I mean, they can see, Turnbull's been talking about how fragile the global economy is, and they have some sense of this. And so what they're trying to do is to stimulate any activity within the economy. I mean, the mining sector's gone down, the building construction sector is on its way down
yes.
now.
Mm.
So they're hoping to do this, but there are dangers involved in this from their point of view. Also, of course, the pressure to do it is, in a way, responding to popular pressure without their actually having to do anything.
Of course.
So they can kind of earn a couple of
brownie points.
By kind of saying, oh, we're on your side,
yeah.
but they're not actually going to do anything about it.
Of course.
Because there was a time in which the government had much more power over these things and could actually tell, effectively, the Reserve Bank what the interest rate should be. But, of course, the ALP, that was one of the things that, with the financial deregulation, we've ended up with a reserve bank, a central bank, that is now supposedly independent of any government policy.
Mm.
The fact that they all think the same way about, the nature of the capitalist system means that they're not actually very independent of each other at all,
of course. The Reserve Bank is a private organisation. It's not a government organisation.
No. It is, it's a statutory authority.
Oh, okay.
But, there are almost no private central banks left. The US is a very complicated one.
Mm.
But while, private banks there have some input in through the structure, it's really, as much an arm of government as the Australian Central Bank. But the Australian Central Bank, they do appoint people who were bankers or connected with it, a couple of them, but normally most of the people on the bank are pulled out of the rest of the corporate system. Once, occasionally, you get a trade union official there, But no, it is
a statutory
another
body.
Statutory authority. Now, they've got, they're supposed to do two things. One is they're supposed to keep the rate of inflation under 3%, and they're supposed to keep unemployment under 5%. Now, these are very difficult to achieve at the same time when things aren't going well, and the real proof of that, of course, was during the recession we had to have.
Oh, yes.
When, in trying to bring inflation down, they drove unemployment up to about 11 or 12%.
Hmm.
However, there's another issue that governments and the Reserve Bank have to try to do something about, and that's not the interest rate. That's the exchange rate. What is the Australian dollar worth, or how much can you get for it? If you're going overseas on a holiday, is the simple example that most people ever encounter this problem for.
Yes.
Now, in December 1983, in what is probably the biggest deform, and most influential deform that the ALP introduced, they floated the exchange rate, and that opened the door to the speculators and all the vultures.
Yep.
Now, the Reserve Bank's cash rate is now bound hand and foot to trying to influence the foreign exchange rate. So they're not only trying to do something about employment and inflation directly, they're also trying to do something about it indirectly through influencing what the exchange rate is. Now, how does all this fit together? Well, as we said in the beginning, interest rates around the world are below zero.
Mm.
our interest rates here, you know, depending how much you've got, you know, you could, after inflation, you're still able to earn about 1.5% here, which you almost nowhere else in the safe world where you can actually do that. So a lot of people, you know, when I say people, we're talking about institutions, are putting money into Australia. This has kept the value of the Australian, Aussie dollar up. Now, while the mining boom's going down, it should have gone down to 70%. It should have gone down to 70 cents, perhaps even 65. Instead of which, it's about 75 and a bit up from there.
Mm.
Now, the problem with that is that it means that imports are cheaper.
Yep.
So that local manufacturers find it harder to compete.
Mm.
And local manufacturers also, and farmers, find it harder to sell their stuff overseas. So this has an effect on, you know, profitability, employment, all of those things within Australia. So the Reserve Bank, dealing with this greatest experiment the world's ever seen, according to Lord Rothschild, it thinks if it cuts the cash rate, this will make Australia less attractive. And therefore, the exchange rate at least will hold at 75. It may even go down to 73 or something. So they're trying to do that at the same time. So this is the competing problems that they have that they're trying to cope with. Now, of course, having a low interest rate produces other consequences. One of the things we've seen, of course, is the boom in
housing.
Rental construction.
Yes.
You know, the people, you know, through the negative gearing bit, people think, oh, I can borrow money at, you know, well, almost for free, you might say, and I can, you know, put up, you know, enough money for a deposit on a commercial property. And so we've seen that big expanse. Now, a lower mortgage rate is clearly good for you if you're paying off your mortgage.
Yep.
But if you're still trying to get into the housing market, if you're actually in the rental market, and, you know, I just noticed up the road from me, a one-bedroom unit in central Canberra is $350 a week.
Yes,
I mean, you multiply that by 52. I mean, it's almost as much as I get on the pension.
Yes.
You know, for a one-bedroom unit. You know,
it's terrible.
So, I mean, you can see why people want to own them to rent out to other people, but it has this other side to the effect as well. So let's look at the banks and why they don't want to push the interest rate down to the full 25%. Of course, they make money out of the interest rate on the housing loans that they make.
Of course.
And if they cut their rates, very simply, they won't make as much.
Mm.
And if they earn less, they won't pay as much to their shareholders.
Mm.
Now, is that a problem for ordinary working people? Well, indirectly it can be. Because if they're paying less to their shareholders, they attract less investment. And the pressure is on banks everywhere to keep a bigger reserve for the next financial storm.
Mm.
When Abbott got in, he set up a new inquiry into the financial system. And one of their big recommendations was that banks should hold more in reserve to be able to weather when the next financial storm hits. That was their recommendation. So that to do that, the banks have to be able to hold the investment they've got by paying, you know, after their shareholders, and indeed attract more in or save it out of what they earn on their higher interest rates. So, again, these complications that seem to operate within here are indeed linked to people's prospects about where the global economy is going. Now, if we go back to the last big financial storm, 2008, working people in Australia were somewhat protected from it, from the worst of it, by three things. One, the government debt at the time was so low that the Commonwealth went in for big stimulus packages, including what are now called helicopter drops into people's bank accounts.
Yes.
You know, and this, you know, people said, you know, we didn't have a recession. It's been 25 years since you've had two consecutive quarters in which there was zero or minus advances in production. So we managed, one of the few countries in the world that actually got through it without a technical recession.
Hmm.
The second thing was the construction phase of the mining boom was still underway. And governments at that stage were still getting a fair amount of tax. I don't say a fair rate of tax, but there was still quite a bit of money coming in from the mining sector. And the third thing was that because of better regulation here over what banks could do, there wasn't the irrational exuberance that brought ruin to the rest of the world.
Yep, that's right.
So they were the three things.
Mm.
Now, two of those have gone.
Yep.
We don't have that, you know, that zero amount of government debt, nowhere near as disastrous as the government's carrying on about, you know, compared to the rest of the world.
Mm.
The construction phase of the mining boom's over,
yep.
And it looks as if the construction phase of the housing boom is also coming to an end.
Yep.
And that means, of course, that the taxation take from both of those sectors is going to shrink.
Of course.
So the only thing that we've got when the next storm hits is a strong banking sector. And a strong banking sector within a capitalist society, because that's what we're talking about, unfortunately, within a capitalist society, that means they have to earn enough to keep their capital reserves high so that if there is a major problem again, they're able to get through it without having to be bailed out. Because if they're bailed out, then, you know, it just means that taxpayers' money, you know,
yep.
the things that ordinary workers have produced have to go into doing that.
Mm.
So when we look at this, it's, you know, we can't just see it as thinking, oh, the banks are price gouging. They may be doing that, but within a capitalist system, in the current global weakness of the system and the uncertainties in it, there can be some protective advantages to working people from what's been happening. And it's up to the left, I think, to see behind the headlines and the screaming to get to this and say, this is why it's perhaps not an entirely bad thing. Because remember, if and when the banks do crash, it's not only the shareholders who are going to suffer, and it won't be the shareholders who'll suffer first or the very most out of it. It's ordinary working people who are going to suffer most out of that.
There are a few questions I want to ask on that, but I think we should move on to the Royal Commission.
Well, perhaps. We've got a little bit of time. Just finally on the Royal Commission.
Mm.
It's because of particular things like the interest rate, like the scams, like their criminal activities, you know, against individual customers, there's obviously a big support for a Royal Commission into the banks. I think the left then can leave it up to, you know, to everybody else to be able to clamour for that. We don't need to put our limited resources into doing that. What we should do is to say, get beyond the particular scandals, look at not how individuals are being, you know, swindled. What we've got to look at is not just the banks, but the entire pack of financial institutions. Because in a deregulated financial system, it's not just the banks anymore. As we've seen, it's the accountants who tell lies on their behalf.
Of course,
it's the
yes.
people who are supposed to give us reports on how well they are. Some of those things called ratings agencies.
Mm.
It has to look at all of those. And it also has to look at how the stock market and the foreign exchange market and the superannuation funds are all tied into this. And so what we need is an inquiry into the whole financial sector.
Yep.
And what we should be calling for is not a royal commission into this, but into a people's commission into the financial sector.
I like that.
So and remember that the ALP calls for a royal commission, but not for any re-regulation of the financial sector. No. They are as committed to a deregulated financial sector as anybody else anywhere in the world, including, one would presume, Lord Rothschild. They won't even call for a re-establishment of the People's Bank. Having sold off the Commonwealth Bank...
Of course.
That simple, you know, wouldn't seem to be the most outrageous thing in the world to say, well, that $9 billion, if you're going to make it, why didn't that come back into public hands?
That's right.
So they're the three things that I shall leave you with for this week.
Thank you very much. But what I was going to ask you, just before you run away, is when you say the banks don't want the workers' money to be used to salvage them if and when they collapse, why would the banks care?
Sorry, I kind of missed...
No, you said before that, you know, the bank wouldn't want to collapse for a start. And if they do, they do not want the workers to be paying, the workers' money to be used to bail them out.
Oh, no. I didn't think, I mean, they would be quite happy for that.
Yeah,
that's
my thought, yeah.
That's why I would think it's a bad thing. There are now pressures, however, and it's happened in countries in the world, the poor... Greeks have been made to pay for this.
Yes.
Instead of governments bailing the banks out, the depositors and the shareholders have to bail in. So that if you've got your savings in, you know, in the Commonwealth Bank, as we found in the Greek crisis, they're made to take some of that savings you've got to pay into the bank itself to keep it afloat. Now, I don't mind that the shareholders are perhaps having to do this,
yes,
except now, of course, often the shareholders don't even know they're shareholders through the superannuation funds.
Yeah, it's all a bit complicated.
So all of that complexity.
Yes, okay. All right, thanks, Humphrey.
All right.
Till another month.
Thank you.
Bye.